Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Hello and welcome to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast once again. Great to have your company, as it is to have the company of my two wonderful co-hosts, Kate Bakos and Dave Johnston. Kate, how are you?
Really grateful that you're hosting. I reckon you're a great host, and we do try and share it around. But
I've got my teacher's voice on now.
Yeah, very
before,
good host.
It's before class starts, but I've got my teacher's voice on.
You're the natural host, Pete.
Very.
Dave, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Pete. Yeah, looking forward to heading off to New Zealand. Listeners probably keep hearing about it because we've just recorded two episodes in a row.
I was trying to
keep
it fresh.
We just did the migration episode prior to this.
So obviously first overseas trip since COVID hit.
Yeah.
So looking forward to flying into Queenstown and then catching up with Sarah's parents and them getting to see the kids again.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Before we get into today's episode, take a listen to our weekly market update.
Today, again, we have a case study, and we try and pick case studies that are not just that we can answer that particular person's question, but also case studies that are relevant to other people, and certainly this one is. But before we do that, Kate, do you have a property market update for us?
Well, I actually want to say thank you to one of our lovely listeners that wrote us a really superb review. And these mean a lot to us, not just five stars. Getting a comment that's specific to something that has resonated with them means a lot. And Wayfarer has said, through this podcast, I've been able to gain so many useful insights into buying property. I'm not overstating it when I say it gave me the confidence to find a buy place, something I had wanted to do for a long while. Thanks all. I think that's a really beautiful thing to tell us, and it certainly is one reason why we do this. We do want to change outcomes for people, and, you know, some people can't just run out to a buyer's agent or pay for a property plan, and so the more people we can help, it certainly gives us a lot of motivation.
Well, that's why we're here, isn't it? To inform, educate, and give people confidence so that they don't make any mistakes, or if they have made mistakes in the past, they don't make them in again because they understand where they went wrong.
Yeah.
Excellent. Great review. Thank you very much for that. Dave, your market update.
Yeah, look, an article caught my eye as I was having lunch on Friday. I'm not sure whether many people know, but in Australia, we only have about 18 days of petrol supplies and 22 days of diesel supply. So that is a big risk for the country, and it's part of why, you know, the Ukrainians have been able to push the Russians back in terms of the war, because they have to go back and resupply. But puts our country at risk in different ways. So what this article made the point of is it's actually just another reason for us to actually become self-reliant and be able to lean into green energies and build what it termed a powerful electric fence. So that means, you know, we actually harness solar, wind, hydro, and it not only helps us with the transition to renewables, it actually can help with our security. And the author made the point of it's actually a way for either party to really combine the security issue with also the transition to renewables. Yeah, I just thought it was a really good point. It obviously then feeds into the transition of our economy, because we're so reliant on fossil fuels, which also then feeds into the strength of our economy and the strength of our property markets in the long run. So I thought I'd share that because I found that, it was a really interesting and insightful piece.
Excellent.
And it's quite scary.
Yes.
It is. So I've got a little property market update because, like, in a space of 20 years, there's only a few months that we can brag about Adelaide. So I'm going to brag about Adelaide today. And from CoreLogic, says, Quote, unlike Sydney and Melbourne's softer conditions, Brisbane and Adelaide continue to shine as Australia's best performers. Of the 651 house markets analysed across Brisbane and Adelaide, not a single one saw a quarterly or annual decline in values.
Wow.
Thank you very much. I can hear the applause in the background.
Boom.
It's the year of Adelaide.
Yeah, it's not very often I get to say that, but whilst Adelaide is top of the pops, I'm very happy to brag about it. I'm sure things will go back to a normal market sooner rather than later, but while they're good, let's praise it.
And does it still feel hot? Is it the topic?
Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. We can't, like I'm doing, I mean, I'm doing these exercises in class and I like to use real life case studies. So we work out what we think it's worth in class, and then it goes to auction and it sells for much more. Or it doesn't even go to auction and it sells before auction. So, I mean, but it's a good lesson for my property students because, you know, here is a hot market. I mean, the hot market doesn't last forever. We will go back to normal soon. But, you know, there is often no rhyme or reason why we're attaining these prices. And in the end, a valuation is an opinion, but the opinion has to be based on facts. So providing you base it on what's recently happened so far as comparable sales are concerned, then that's solid evidence. You know, if somebody decides to put in a stupid offer or two people battle it out at auction for whatever reason, that's a different story. But your opinion, that is your valuation, needs to be based on solid evidence.
We love hearing from our listeners and we'd love to tackle more of your questions. So please, if you have any on your mind, no matter how great or small, send us a message. You can email us info@propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor or go to our website, Facebook page, or simply click on the link in your podcast app under the play button and fill out our online form.
Let's go into our case study. Let me give you an overview here. So we've got James and Amanda ask the question, should we purchase a straight out investment property or if we can, an investment property that could double up as part Airbnb, part holiday house and potentially become a full-time holiday house or even a downsizing home? And by the way, if that's not enough, you know, options there, without compromising on our lifestyle and achieving our long-term rental income goals for retirement. So these James and Amanda want their cake and they want to eat it too, very quickly, very quickly. All right, Dave, over to you, my friend.
Yeah, so look, James and Amanda, a lovely couple who we did a property plan for, they did want their cake and to eat it too, and why not try to achieve that? There's always this real trade-off with our property planning and decisions between financial goals and lifestyle goals. And it's trying to connect the two in the way that works best for each individual and couple. So, you know, they love the beachside lifestyle, knew the areas they were keen on, but had been chasing the market up for around 2 years. And that had probably cost them $200,000 or $300,000 in opportunity costs. But further, they now are at the point where they felt like they couldn't afford to buy what they wanted to buy. And they wanted to see if they could solve that. So just a bit of an overview. So James was earning a base salary of $250,000 and usually qualified for a bonus of $50,000. Amanda was a stay-at-home mum. They had two teenage daughters at quite expensive private schools, same private school, with about 1.5 and 3.5 years to go. So they were due to come up to a lot of cash flow savings in 1.5 years and 3.5 years. So they were wanting to see how could they maybe take a bit more risk now, knowing their financial position and cash flow would be a lot stronger quite soon. They also wanted to make sure, with us all being locked down in COVID, they're really even more conscious of being able to enjoy life experiences with their daughters before they moved away from home. And so the holiday house really appealed to them. So their living expenses were up around $10,000 per month or above, but half of that was going on private school fees. They also thought once the kids finished school, then Amanda could start doing a bit of part-time work, so that could also increase cash flow. But at the moment, their surplus cash flow was very little. There wasn't much at all. They were living in a in their home in sort of an inner to middle eastern suburb in a major capital city worth around $2 million. They had debt of $240,000, paying $2,500 per month in repayments, but had received an inheritance, and this was now 100% offset, but they were still making that payment. And then they had another $200,000 in savings, basically earning nothing. And they were conscious that, you know, they had a lot of cash there that wasn't really working for them and had for a couple of years. So, but they were also both conservative number twos on the risk profile.
So Dave, before you go on, can you just quickly go through the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and what a number two means?
Yeah, so one is very conservative in our risk profiling. Two is conservative. Three, balanced. Four, aggressive. Five, very aggressive.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for that.
So look, that's sort of the summary of their situation when they came to us to build a property plan, work towards, and so we'll come to their goals and also ensure that ultimately their next purchase aligned with their long-term goals. So is there anything, that either of you...
I'm very keen to hear what their goals are, because from the introduction, they want a lot. Yeah. You know, want an investment property, doubles up as a holiday house, can earn an income, might be a full-time holiday house, could be a downsizer. So I'm very keen to hear what their lifestyle goals are.
To add a little bit of clarity around this and let our listeners know how often we say this, I want to chat about that very point. This is not an uncommon scenario that lands on our desks, is it, Dave?
Not at all, and particularly it's increased since COVID.
Very much so. And there are two fundamental challenges here for this couple. The first one is that what they want is not necessarily going to be an easy investment decision for them, because they are clouding the waters here. They're wanting something that will perform and something that they can enjoy. And every now and then we can get that balance right, but more often than not, it is not a balance. It's actually a decision is forced, because I have to say to someone, are you wanting a holiday house that you'll enjoy irrespective of how it performs, or are you wanting something that you may not even want to live in that will work for you? And striking a balance is tough. Now, timing for them is tough as well, because they've made this decision when these coastal areas have had a really good run. And as we said in our migration episode, we were talking about the impact on the regions and in particular the places that have attracted people from a holiday house point of view. Has it introduced more vulnerability as an investment decision? Now, the other challenge that this couple have outside of the holiday house conundrum is their risk profile. I really love seeing someone being a bit more aggressive when they're younger and backing that off as they get older, because they need to then protect their nest egg. You don't want to go betting the farm when you're getting towards the end of your working life, because you've got less years to patch up any mistakes or to compensate for any risks that didn't go your way. But to be conservative at the start and then decide to up the ante, that spells a little bit of risk as well. So I can't wait to hear how this unfolds, because they need to work out a way with the cash flows that they've got, which at the moment, while the two daughters are at an expensive private school, and not abundant, that their cash flows are really tight. So even though they've got that money sitting there, it's offsetting everything. If they go for a property that's a capital growth asset with high negative outgoings, out of pockets, where will that money come from, and how will that impact their life at the moment, their enjoyment of the lifestyle with the girls who they should be enjoying and putting money into while they're still at home?
Yeah, great summary, Kate. And they were certainly some of the key conundrums that we faced as we were untangling and developing this property plan. And as you said, it's not uncommon, this type of scenario. And there usually is a real pull for a lot of people between lifestyle versus investments. But this had a few extra curly aspects to it, which is why we're running it as a case study in the episode. So in terms of the goals, some of the lifestyle goals that they had were, they wanted to increase the family lifestyle immediately. Location in a regional area, preferably time away together. It could be a project, but with a long-term plan to make money. As I said, they wanted to purchase a holiday house that they could share with the kids and have her as a retreat while the kids were in school, but also ideally be able to Airbnb it when they didn't want to use it, and to help manage the cash flow. They're also hopeful it could become the principal place of residence down the track when the time was right. They also wanting to be able to assist their daughters to get into property down the track as well without breaking the bank. From a property goals perspective, they bought a property in another major capital city and sold it and realised how much money opportunity cost, so that they wanted to be able to plan to not have to sell, at least until they were transitioning to retirement.
Can I ask a question, Dave?
Yep.
Do you know why they sold it?
I think the conservative nature, they wanted to purchase the next property without having too much debt on it. And they probably also, like a lot of people, don't plan for the possibility of the early or the first property turning into an investment down the track. So they don't preserve the loan balance and use offset accounts to optimise tax deductions when that happens, and to also have more cash to go towards having less debt on the future home. So I'd say those factors, yeah. Their goals, they told us what they were keen for their next purchase to be worth $1.2 million with a financial return of 4.5%. Ideally, a coastal location, could be an investment, occasional holiday home, future long-term home, all wrapped up in one, ideally. But in the first plan meeting, they then admitted to us that they couldn't buy what they were looking for at 1.2.
Oh, really?
And they really needed 1.4 to 1.6, which we all had a bit of a chuckle about. Although they didn't have much surplus cash flow, to some degree we had to invent and find some cash flow out of thin air to be able to get them up to this sort of $1.4 million level, because they didn't want to change their lifestyle. They wanted to keep about $200,000 in reserve. They currently had about $460,000. And they wanted to have a goal. They had a goal of rental income of $60,000 at retirement. They were some of the goals. Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about, on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au. So basically from there, what we did was we modelled out one scenario at the $1.2 million. So it showed them the price point that they said, look, that was what they thought would be ideal. But then we showed them how $1.4 million was achievable for them. So $1.2 million allowed them to have no cash contribution, preserve the debt on the existing home, and we converted the repayment on the home loan from principal and interest to interest only. So that obviously was a way to find $2,500 of extra cash flow right away. But what we're able to do with the $1.4 million scenario was use some of the cash to pay off the home so they had the extra borrowing capacity. Then they could fund the $1.4 million plus most of the purchase costs on that. We'd obviously remove the $2,465 per month loan repayments, and they were able to achieve that scenario. So there were many benefits from that scenario. And, you know, no surprise, that was their preferred pathway. And they're really happy to see that. So they could still, through the mortgage strategy, have $200,000 up their sleeve post the purchase. Our strategic mortgage brokers did a great job, and find a lender who is willing to actually factor in the fact that their private school fees were going to be ending in 1.5 and 3.5 years, and actually take that off the table.
Well, that's great that you found a lender that was practical, because many of them just see black and white. You know, this is the way it is now, and that's the way it's going to be forever. No, that's great.
It's a perfect illustration of why a strategic mortgage broker makes a difference. And that's not just plugging your team, Dave. It's someone who absolutely understands policy and tax deductibility and being able to look forward and plot out changes in cash flow is incredible. What I'm really impressed by is how you freed up the cash flow to start with, but I'm also intrigued to know how the lender treated the school fees. Was it more or less allocating funds on hand and popping them into a different account and saying, you know, do not disturb, this is for school?
Spot on, yeah. Right. So the lender had to see there was that amount of money sat to the side that could, because they had such a buffer of savings, they could see they had the cash to be able to on hand to fund the remaining years of private school. Mm-hmm. So that was a key component for them to be able to discount that when it came to borrowing capacity.
Brilliant. Now, how did they go, or am I jumping the gun, when it comes to rental yield for the target property? Because 4.5% in a lot of our locations that are close enough to capital cities to make it an easy commute and a change in lifestyle, 4.5% is a really lofty number.
So basically we talked them through that 4.5% might only be achievable if they're Airbnb-ing it close to full time. To get the loan approval, we didn't base it off 4.5%.
Yep.
You know, it was based off more like 2.5% to 3%, probably around 2.5%. So just if it was tenanted full time. So they understood that may not be achievable because, you know, they had such a big savings buffer, which we were able to put in place through the mortgage strategy. And their cash flow, because we were removing the $2,465 a month, was basically staying the same, if not even getting better through this transition. They were comfortable to maintain that level of cash flow because they had the buffer aside, understanding that their cash flow is going to free up in 1.5 years and 3.5 years. So they weren't as focused on achieving the 4.5% as a non-negotiable every year, if that makes sense. And they did still want to be able to use it.
I love it. You've got another note in here, and it's tracked your conversation with this couple beautifully, and there's a desire to help their children get into property. Are you happy to chat to that?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things we talked about was because they have so much equity across the first property, so really across the two properties, and this is another reason the lender were willing to be flexible on policy, is the total loan-to-value ratio is under 50%. So there's significant security. And we talked them through, it's simpler to help your kids when they're ready or when you and they are ready to help them buy by perhaps tapping into your equity and savings to perhaps provide them with a deposit rather than looking to necessarily buy a property for them. They may not even end up living in that location. So although we did take them through the idea that buying a pure investment would, from a financial perspective, could be the best outcome for you, and that was the 1.2, they were really drawn to be able to get this future home. But then, yeah, on the daughters, we talked about helping them when they're ready, when they knew where they wanted to buy, rather than trying to do something prior that they might not even live in.
The magic of what we call a third-party guarantor loan with equity is that the parents are letting the equity do the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
But it's not actually costing the parents anything other than the obvious risk.
Mm.
And it doesn't, in my opinion, take away from the child when they're saying, I did this, I financed it. They've paid for all of that lending. It's just that they haven't had to find a big deposit and in some cases any deposit. And that's, you know, certainly based on the relationship between the parents and the children and what sort of values the parents and the children have, because some parents won't be so eager to give their kids complete assistance with no deposit down. Others could, especially if they're working hard or they're studying or whatever. Yeah. I've done it, and I think it's such a wonderful gift if you can do it. You've all got to be across the risk, and the child's got to be really respectful of what you're doing for them. But I love the idea of parental loan guarantees.
Yeah, it's a very simple solution without potentially any cash flow or cash outlay to the kids, but allows them to not have to pay mortgage insurance as one thing and potentially not have to save up as much of a deposit as another.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they chose the $1.4 million scenario, and literally within about 3 weeks of the plan meeting, or we call it the strategy meeting, after the property plan was completed, they actually negotiated the purchase of an investment property / holiday home that they could see themselves potentially downsizing into down the track. It was about 1 kilometer from the shore or 5 streets, on over 1,000 square meters, had a beautiful beachy feel, something that they could rent out on Airbnb. It did need a bit of work, but they were happy to, you know, and that allowed them to get into that location with something that was a bit more run down. They were able to fully finance the purchase was they end up paying 1.405, so just over the 1.4 plus costs. With their $60,000 rental goal, the house in the major capital city could almost earn that rent on its own. So they've got choices down the track. If they did downsize into the holiday house, down the track they could rent out the property in the major capital city and almost achieve their $60,000. They could potentially just add one low price, probably regional property between now and retirement in the next few years without too much debt to get above that $60,000 rental goal. They could always, as part of transition to retirement, sell the major capital city property, pay down any remaining debt on what would become the future home by the beach, use the surplus cash to then fund investment properties to get that $60,000. So they've got different choices, and their cash flow is really going to free up in the next 1.5 to 3.5 years. And so there's a pathway that could be modelled out through to achieving their goals.
So in the end, Dave, it was a very happy ending. They did get to have their cake and eat it too.
They did. Well done. Yeah. Yeah.
From somebody who doesn't know as much about finance as you do, I'm assuming that paying off the existing home loan played a big role in being able to achieve that goal?
Yeah, look, that was one of the big unknowns for them. And in an ideal world, we would have preserved that cash in case that home becomes an investment and they'd have $240,000 of tax deductible debt. But that just couldn't be done with financing.
Serviceability.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, well done, mate. I'm sure they'd be very happy. Fairy tale ending there. Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're just going to keep sharing a case study with our listeners every 5 or 6 weeks because I think most people can find some aspects of it that they can relate to in their own situation.
Well, even just the simple thing is, you know, paying off your own home loan. Even though the money was there and offsetting it, the banks feel much more comfortable if you'd paid it off, increases your serviceability, and bang, you know, you get to the best of both worlds.
Mm. Yeah. And for any parents out there with school fees, I hope they're listening into this because this is not it's a very unusual solution. It's not a mainstream solution, but I have seen it done before by a clever strategic mortgage broker who was looking after his own finances, and it was exactly the same thing.
Yeah. And, Dave, changing from principal and interest to interest only also helped the cash flow.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, so there's just tweaks like that when you dig into the detail, you know, finding a way to make it work. And what's right for one, you know, for these guys may not be, you know, right for other people. You know, in an ideal world, as I said, we would preserve the debt, although there wasn't much left on that current home should it become an investment property. But in this case, paying it out allowed for some of this extra flexibility. With a lender, it wasn't a major bank. It wasn't a real sort of second-tier non-bank. It was one in between, but I won't give it away who it was.
What I think you did really well is got their thinking around something that would have been foreign or not what they wanted to do. As conservative people, the idea of switching to interest only after you've spent all these decades paying down your loan, that would have been a mind shift that was really critical to them being able to opt for this solution.
Yeah, and they knew there was something in their mortgage strategy that they could do, but just they weren't sure what was the right way to go.
Yeah, great outcome.
All right, well, very good. Thank you very much for that, Dave. Very insightful. A lot of very valuable lessons learnt through a case study, or certainly, you know, to me highlighted simple things like going from principal and interest to interest only and paying off your home loan can really help you achieve other goals in life. Well done. All right, please don't go away, listeners, because we have our gold nuggets from Kate and Dave.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Kate, what's your gold nugget?
Well, my gold nugget relates to this case study because clearly this couple had a real affinity with the beachside location that they zoned in on and eventually chose and purchased. But if you're looking for a coastal or an inland place to call home in future years, you've really got to get it right. Because if it's not a research decision, you can find yourself sitting on a property that might not be the ideal investment, or Airbnb might not be paying off for you. It could be creating, you know, a bit of strain. And if it's not an area long-term that you'll settle into and be happy with, then you're looking at stamp duty again and agent selling fees. And that's a cost that you don't really want to have to go through ever. So if in doubt, don't just research the area, try before you buy, go and rent there for a little bit or stay there for your holidays and try and get a sense for how you feel as a local.
Excellent. Very good, Kate. If I could just chime in quickly, just following up from answering your question at the beginning, Kate, what's the Adelaide market like? For those of you that want to check out a couple of properties, 13 Esplanade Christie's Beach sold for 1.15 million in January this year, 900 square metres, makes it $1,280 a square metre. On the weekend, 2A Gulfview Road Christie's Beach sold for $925,000, $700 a square metre, $700 a square metre block. That works out to $1,320 a square metre. So the property that sold on the weekend is 50 to 100 metres away from the beach and sold for more per square metre than the Esplanade property did 3 months ago.
Crazy.
Now, to me, that doesn't make sense, but maybe to some of you that might, but that's what I mean, Kate. It's just and it's a lifestyle property. So, you know, when emotion is involved, you know, sense, as in S-E-N-C-E, goes out the window and dollars play a much bigger role. So
sounds like someone's knocking at your door there, Pete.
Who tries to renovate at 20 to 9 in the morning?
God. Oh, my God.
My gold nugget is property planner case study is just a great example of all the moving pieces we have between our own financial situation, our own personal drivers, and the outcome is very different and unique to each individual or couple. And that's one of the things I'd like to highlight as we do more case studies. And to be honest, buying a investment / holiday home that could be coming a downsize home, you know, that is normally what we'd be talking people out of doing. So this, you know, through the full journey, this is a pretty unusual one. It's not a common scenario, but it just, you know, further highlights why the outcomes are so unique and the inputs are so unique for every set of individuals or couples who develop their own property plan.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Kate. Thank you, Dave. Dave, I wish you and your family a lovely trip over to New Zealand.
Thanks, Pete.
Kate, you and I will continue to enjoy the break from school holidays. You're going away, aren't you?
I am. I might catch you in some
Adelaide. Yeah, you're coming to Adelaide, so we'll certainly do that. Yeah, so
I wish you a great time in Canberra and Noosa, Pete.
Thank you very much.
Sunning it up in Noosa.
Well, it's been raining a lot in southeast Queensland, so I sincerely hope it stops.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're catching up on a COVID holiday. We booked this 18 months ago and delayed it and delayed it and delayed it. And finally, hopefully, fingers crossed, nobody in our family gets COVID, so we have to isolate.
Yeah.
We cannot, because not all the kids are here in Adelaide. They're all, you know, they're in different parts of Australia. So hopefully we can all catch up at the end of the month.
Nobody's to go out.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
I think when all the Melburnians are migrating to New South Wales and Queensland, one thing they weren't focusing on was the annual rainfall relative. Because Melbourne actually has less annual rainfall than Sydney. Not many people know that. Yeah.
Right. All right, folks. Well, we look forward to catching up with you soon for our next exciting episode of the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor. Bye for now.
See you guys later.
See you later.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the themes discussed, take a listen to episodes 5, The Lifestyle versus Investment Conundrum, episode 22, Why the Family Home is Often the Biggest Piece of the Investment Puzzle, episode 81, Holiday Houses, Delirium or Dream, episode 95, Security Guarantees, Co-Borrowing, Gifts and More, Helping Your Kids Buy Their First Property, episode 106, Australia-China Relations. What is the risk to the Australian housing market? Episode 116. How to increase your borrowing power. Learn how investors, first home buyers and upgraders increase capacity.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bacos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast, and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist, and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.